Once again this weekend, the women marched. And once again, they had nothing to say. We will dismantle the women's march point by point. Then Ali Stuckey and Amber Athey join the panel of deplorables to discuss feminism, the 45th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the pointless government shutdown, how technology is leading to unhappiness, and further evidence that Donald Trump is boosting the global economy. I'm Michael Knowles, and this is The Michael Knowles Show. So by what I have to assume is divine providence, I spent the women's march in pre-Cana marriage counseling with my fiancé, sweet little Elisa, actually sitting next to a guy named Jesus. I turned to my right and there's a guy just named Jesus. He pronounced it differently, but sitting right there in pre-marriage counseling. So while the shrieking harpies yelled about nothing downtown, I learned about how women actually are empowered, and I just wanted to share a few takeaways because it was pretty good. So one, while feminism preaches about the equality of the sexes, women's empowerment, you'll notice it only values masculine traits, you know, assertiveness, aggression, casual sex. It leaves women generally unfulfilled and used. So you see this especially in the hookup culture. So in the hookup culture, you know, women are encouraged to view sex in exactly the same way that men view sex. So men went frequently, I don't want to tell any tales out of school, men go out and they try to have sex. And casual sex is much more common for men. So women are told, you have to do that. You have to value that too. And if women don't value casual sex, if they don't feel fulfilled from it, they're told that something is wrong with them. This obviously leads to men just doing whatever they please. And it's very nice for men, but it's an ironic effect of feminism. And Christian marriage, on the other hand, sacramental marriage, on the other hand, is predicated on the equality of the sexes, on the equal dignity of the sexes. In the beginning, God created man, both male and female, he created them. Eve comes from Adam's rib, and Adam says, bone of my bone, you are flesh of my flesh. And the rib here is important, because Eve doesn't come from Adam's skull, from his head. She's not above Adam. She doesn't come from Adam's foot. She isn't from his toe. She's not below him. She's from his rib. She has equal dignity. Men and women have equal dignity from the very beginning. And so there you have a real equality of the sexes, but a complementary equality. So in civil marriage, non-Christian marriage, non-sacramental marriage, civil marriage is a dissoluble contract that either party can break. So when men get tired, they can move on, they can find a younger wife, and they can leave women who have become less sexually desirable, often less professionally capable, high and dry, usually leave them in custody of the children that they need to feed. And because sacramental marriage is an oath taken before God that cannot be broken. One phrase that was used is you shouldn't make a fool of God. And as the spouses grow closer together, they grow closer to God, like an equilateral triangle. So as they move closer to God, they move closer to one another. At the pre-marriage counseling, they didn't harp too much on natural family planning, commonly referred to as pull and pray, which I sort of expected them to do. I was expected they'd say, have kids immediately, you have a gazillion kids right now. But they did point out that marriage, which is from the beginning closed off to even the possibility of procreation, we don't want to have kids, we just want to have a nice beach house or something, that isn't valid in the eyes of the church. We have to be open to life and to giving life and to giving love. Even not everyone's going to have kids. Not everyone can have kids. But there's a sense of viewing the marriage, which is that it has to be open to life, that I think is widely throughout the culture is not the case in the United States, especially after this sexual revolution. But the church still views it that way, and it's very affirming and it's very life-giving. So as we were learning all of this, sweet little Elisa and I, across town in downtown LA, the shrieking harpies were marching to end life through abortion. I guess. Those were the most coherent signs. Really, I don't think they had any idea what they were protesting. Fleckus Talks, friend of the show, he went out there to check it out. Here's what he saw.
Basically everything that he stands on as a platform, to be honest.
What about you? What do you disagree with Trump so far?
Well, I worked for a tribe for a lot of time, so about 5 years, so a lot of negativity towards the tribes. I'm not down with that. And also, you know, just the bullshit.
What is like the number one reason that everyone's here? Who am I here with?
Margaret.
Nat. Well, what brings you here today?
Everything.
They had nothing to say. What are you here for? I'm not sure. They had absolutely nothing to say. The historian David McCullough observed that to write well is to think clearly, which is why it's so hard. But they can't write well. They can't put a sentence together because they don't know what they're there for. They aren't thinking clearly. They're seeing a lot of people out and they're marching, and we know that we should be marching. We should feel things. What are you there for? You know, just to be it, to empower and to come out, and I have no idea. It's just foggy, meaningless thinking. This is incredible. The New York Times listed the best quotes from the most articulate women's marchers that it could find. Here is the creme de la creme of the aimless shrieking harpies. The first quote they use: "One thing I hope for women in 2018, I want us to prove that we can. We are here. We know we can do it now. We are here to stay." That was a 36-year-old woman who said that, named Lisa Paz. The amazing thing with all of these quotes, you'll see, is you can't tell which of them were said by 6-year-olds and which of them were said by 36-year-olds. But consider every single word that was just said there. We are here. Wait, no one ever said you weren't here. No one ever, I promise you, no one ever thought you weren't here. We know that the women are here. They're more than half of the country. That we can, we know you can do a lot of things. No one, they're reacting not only to problems that don't exist or to quit. No one ever said you're not here or you can't do something or whatever. They're not even making a point. They're just saying words that sound like they mean something, but they don't really mean anything. They're just words. As Hamlet would say, words, 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 mashed up together that don't have any significance. Another quote: "There is power in numbers. We all have different reasons for being here, but we are all here to educate ourselves and empower each other. It is an honor to be here." That was a 19-year-old named Summer. Now, they don't actually have different reasons at all for being here. It's all the same thing, and it's unreason. There is no reason. There aren't different ones, though. I'm here for this, I'm here for that. It's the same totally vague, platitudinous nothing. And that woman went on. She said, "It felt like such an important moment in history." And that's the key here. That's the key to this whole protest, the whole women's march. It isn't about anything. It just seems like something important. It has the look of a real protest movement, like, say, the Civil Rights Movement or John Brown's raids, the abolition movement. It looks like that, but it isn't that. They just want to seem like activists, but they don't want anything because they have everything. Another quote: "I hope women keep coming together for positive movements in 2018. That was a 22-year-old named Shamimi Branch. "I hope women keep coming together for positive..." That doesn't mean anything. Obviously, it doesn't mean anything. But Shamimi, you'll note, isn't even marching for positive movements or whatever that is. She's there to get extra credit for her gender studies class. Her gender studies class offered her credit to go to this thing, and then she's repeated the platitudes she heard. That means that this is being encouraged by the culture, by institutions. This isn't countercultural. It isn't subversive. It's part of the cultural orthodoxy. To oppose the women's march is to contravene the orthodoxy of political correctness. It could put your career in jeopardy. This is real life hashtag slacktivism, signifying nothing other than one's own performed virtue. But it's in real life. It's moved off of Twitter into real life, but it's just as empty. It's just as vapid. The next quote: "I believe that women are the key to world peace and justice. I'm hoping that all women infuse their organizations with the common good, because that's what we need for our country." Philip Blank, 88 years old, have no idea what that means. Next quote: "In 2018, we want girls to stay strong and be confident in what they can do. The more we stand together, the more that we can do together." Now, I know that sounds like all of the other quotes you just heard. That was from an 11-year-old girl. And that's fine. If an 11-year-old girl wants to say something that doesn't really mean anything and is just kind of muddy thinking, that's fine. That's what 11-year-olds do. The trouble is the 50-year-olds are saying the same thing. The 11-year-olds are just as articulate as the 50-year-olds. What's the next quote? "I hope that women fill up a whole lot of offices. That's what it'll take to turn this around. We need to step up to the plate and do it." That was less articulate than the 11-year-old. The 11-year-old made much more sense. That was Beverly May, 59 years old, and she said, "It seems like every day is an assault on my soul with what comes out in Washington. The dismantling of our democracy, blah, 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 blah." She can't point to anything in particular, of course. Just the feeling. That's all the feels, man. Next quote, I hope for fair representation and more women in government. I think that's where change will happen. So you hear in all of these quotes, that was a 43-year-old who said that, just as meaningless as the 11-year-old. They're all about change. So they're all saying we need change. We need to change things. What change? What change do you want? What are you hoping for? There isn't any clear change. We just had 8 years of Barack Obama, the most left-wing administration in modern American history. We've elected your candidates for years. What change do you want? Nothing, just perpetual change. That's what we need. Next quote, I'm participating because education is the only cure for ignorance. I believe women know compassion and kindness and love and empathy more than men. That was a man. That was a 26-year-old man who said that. Unfortunately, these days, education seems to be the cause of ignorance rather than the solution of it. Next quote, I want everyone to become equal. It's like we're living in the 1920s and it is ridiculous. We need freedom for all. That was a 20-year-old, Rebecca Logan. She's right, because the stock market is really high. Our culture is really decadent. That is true. In a way, it is a lot like the 1920s. Unfortunately, people here are not only politically and philosophically ignorant, they're historically ignorant as well. There's this common perception among the lightly educated, the millennials, that the past was uniformly just those bad olden days before the goodness of modernity. And this is the heart of the progressive vision of the world. You hear it throughout, the change, we need the change, and the this and the that. The progressive vision of the world is that we're always getting better. We're going toward progress, and sometimes people who are either stupid or evil try to stand in the way of progress. Those people are conservatives. But we know where progress is, and that's why we have to be changing. We can't be happy with what we have. We can't count our blessings because we're not at utopia yet. We're going to go back to the Garden of Eden, darn it. We have not been kicked out of perfection. Human nature is perfectible. But of course, that isn't true. And they can't, that's all they can say, right? Because they can't articulate quite what they want, quite what is wrong. There's just something. Another woman said, we're three generations, my mother, my daughter, and me. It's incumbent upon us as women to stand up and represent. Things are not going to change if we don't become the instruments of the change. So you hear the change, that it's all just about change. I was a 51-year-old who said that. But the standing is important here, too. The standing, Michael Oakeshott writes in Rationalism and Politics that the rationalist is always standing. He's just standing. They can't do anything because they're so far in their own abstractions that they don't realize that real life takes place in time and space and with flesh. So they just have to stand. So she's standing for change, whatever that means. Next quote, I'm marching because I want women to continue fighting and for the conversation to be more inclusive of the transgender community. That was Joe Uvales, 28, whose stage name is Beatrix and who is from Brownsville. Joe is a man. This is an irony of the intersectionality stuff, is that now men are choosing to just call themselves women, and then they get to take over the women's march, and now there's no purpose to the women's march because it's a man's march. Next quote, we need to stand up not only for our choices, but for everyone else's choices, even if we disagree. We have to accept each other and respect each other and meet in the middle, okay? Next one said, I chose this sign. This is the last one. I chose this sign because the term angry black woman is so heavily stigmatized. And I want black women in 2018 to know they're allowed to feel the widest amount of human emotions. And that includes anger, because anger inspires impactful change. Anger inspires impactful change. The word impactful, that isn't a real word. But people say, it's like the quintessence of meaningless sloganeering. It was a word that was invented in the 1960s. It doesn't mean anything. And that quote really sums it all up. It's just about feelings. We need to feel things, and then the feeling is going to vaguely do something, but not really do anything. It's impactful. Clickhole did a parody of this kind of slacktivism a couple of years ago, but now the culture has transcended parody. Here's a clip that could be an advertisement for the Women's March.
I've always wanted to be part of something bigger than myself.
To make a difference.
You go through life and you see all this injustice, but you never really do anything about it. You don't know how.
I have two little kids, so I'm always thinking about their future.
Every solution begins with just one person stepping up and taking responsibility.
That's why I'm taking the pledge.
I'm taking the pledge because I care about my community.
For my kids.
My grandchildren.
For you.
For me.
For us.
For us, for them, and for me too.
Because I care about the future, and not just my future, but the future of everyone.
Every single person.
My baby boys.
Taking a pledge is about standing up for what matters and what's right.
It doesn't matter if you're black, white, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, anyone can take the pledge.
I got my brother to take the pledge, and he got his friend to do it. I got everyone in my school to take the pledge. You get her to take the pledge, and she gets someone else, who gets someone else, and on and on and on.
And suddenly, we've got something much bigger than any one of us.
You take the pledge, and you're part of a global movement of people who believe in change.
This is big. I can feel it. Can you feel it?
You go online, and you see these little videos of all around the world, people taking the pledge and sharing it with their friends, and it's inspiring.
My name is Ziwei, and I'm taking the pledge.
I'm taking the pledge.
I'm taking the pledge.
We're taking the pledge!
It's easy to be cynical, but I really do believe it's possible to change the world.
Wake up, people. It's 2015. We can freaking do this.
That could have been the advertisement for the Women's March. Just meaningless, just nothing. It doesn't get any better, by the way, on the Women's March website. Here is the mission statement from womensmarch.com. The mission of Women's March is to harness the political power of diverse women in their communities to create transformative social change. Women's March is a women-led movement providing intersectional education on a diverse range of issues and creating entry points for new grassroots activists and organizers to engage in their local communities through trainings, outreach programs, and events. Women's March is committed to dismantling systems of oppression through nonviolent resistance and building inclusive structures guided by self-determination, dignity, and respect. What does any of that mean? They get a bit more specific later on, but this just shows you how out of touch they are. The first principle that they list is ending violence. They write, women deserve to live full and healthy lives free of all forms of violence against our bodies. Just to correct the record here, women live significantly longer than men on average. By the end of the 20th century, the U.S. male life expectancy was 73.4 years compared to 80.1 years for women. Unlike men, when women register to vote, they don't simultaneously have to register for the military draft. Men are far more likely to be the victims of violent crime than women. 76.8% of murder victims are male. Boys and men are far more likely than girls and women to be victims of assault and robbery as well. Additionally, according to the Gallup World Poll, women report being happier with their lives than their male counterparts. Women'sMarch.com goes on to the euphemistically titled Reproductive Rights. They say, we believe in reproductive freedom. We do not accept any federal, state, or local rollback, cuts, or restrictions on our ability to access quality reproductive health care services, birth control, HIV AIDS prevention, or medically accurate sexuality education. This means open access to safe, legal, affordable abortion and birth control for all people. So it's just about abortion. They put all that other stuff there, but it's really about abortion. And yet, according to a 2016 Marist poll, despite constant Democrat euphemisms, renaming abortion as women's issues or reproductive health, nationally, the vast majority of women, 77%, support restricting abortion to at most the first trimester. Far fewer, just 71% of men, support restrictions on abortion. The women are clearer. The majority of women, 59%, say abortion is morally wrong. 52% of women believe that abortion should at most, be permitted in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. But nevertheless, according to the Women's March, women want abortion on demand, anytime, any place. It just isn't backed up by reality. On workers' rights, womensmarch.com declares, we believe in an economy powered by transparency, accountability, security, and equity. All women should be paid equitably. And you hear this constantly, this popular disinformation that there's a gender pay gap. Women make 77 cents on the dollar. No equal pay for equal work. But that gender pay gap disappears once you control for factors like education, time in the industry, and hours worked. Single childless women in metropolitan areas, they don't earn less than their male counterparts, they earn more than their male counterparts by 8% on average. Nationally, women also graduate from college at significantly higher rates than men. In 2015, 39% of women 25 to 29 had earned a bachelor's degree compared to just 32% of men. On civil rights, womensmarch.com explains, we believe civil rights are our birthright, including voting rights. This is odd to pick a fight on voting rights, as according to the Center for American Women and Politics, since 1980, women have voted at higher rates in every single presidential election than men. So by 2016, that gap widened to 63.3% of women voting compared to just 59.3% of men. Additionally, the number of female voters has exceeded the number of male voters in every presidential election since 1964, despite constituting a majority of the U.S. population, 50.8% to 49.2%, women also benefit from affirmative action policies on campus and in the workplace that give them a competitive advantage over men. There's a section on disability rights. Women'sMarch.com proclaims, "We believe that all women's issues are issues faced by women with disabilities and deaf women." I guess that one's right, isn't it? I guess that's fair. Deaf women are still women. I don't know what the point of that is, but sure, that's the one thing that the Women's March got right. Deaf women are women. On immigrant rights, WomensMarch.com insists, "Rooted in the promise of America's call for huddled masses yearning to breathe free, we believe in immigrant and refugee rights, regardless of status or country of origin. We believe migration is a human right and that no human being is illegal." So putting aside for a moment the illogic of a national policy to do away with national borders, even on the numbers, the Women's March doesn't seem to represent women. Even among illegal aliens brought to the United States as children and teenagers, even the Dreamers, the most sympathetic and relentlessly demagogued group of illegal aliens, a November survey from Morning Consult and Politico shows that fewer than 30% of Americans support amnesty. Even among Democrats, support for granting amnesty to the most sympathetic group of illegal aliens is just 44%. Finally, last segment on environmental justice, WomensMarch.com observes, "We believe that every person and every community in our nation has the right to clean water, clean air, and access to and enjoyment of public lands. Lucky for them, federal law has protected all of those things, to say nothing of state and local management, for at least the past 5 decades. The Women's March is the most frivolous protest in the history of the world. To discuss, we bring on 2 women who are not frivolous, Ali Stuckey and Amber Athey. But first, before I can talk to these brilliant and beautiful women, I've got to talk about Skillshare. I've got to keep the lights on in here, folks. This is a wonderful thing. So some people, all they want to do is complain that they can't get ahead, they can't make more money, they can't learn anything, they can't start a new career, whatever. And then other people are just productive and they just do it. Skillshare.com is the best way to do this. So, I've talked about this before. This isn't the first time we've talked about Skillshare, but I love it. So it's January. You're probably thinking about your New Year's resolution if you haven't broken it already. I know it's late January, so usually most of those are gone by now. But while many people have resolved to go on a diet, start shedding for the wedding, as I need to do before my tuxedo fitting, hit the gym, call mom more often, Skillshare encourages listeners to use 2018 to learn new skills and make this year their best year yet. So Skillshare.com is great. It's an online learning platform with over 18,000 classes in design, business, technology, more. For me, it's very hard for me to manage my time really well. I get pulled in a lot of different directions. Obviously, I always need to finish my stogies, and I got to sleep at least 27 hours a day. So it's very hard to fit things in. There are great classes on Skillshare about time management, how to be more productive. Whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle because it's 2018 and you're not just going to work at the plant for 60 years anymore and get a pension. You need to have a lot of different skills and be ready for a modern economy. Or you just want to start something new, Skillshare will keep you learning in 2018 and beyond. So, just in time for this new year, I'm taking a few classes, but the most important one is time management, because if I can't figure out how to be more productive, then I can't take more classes. Skillshare is offering the Michael Knowles Show listeners a limited time offer of 3 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. You really should take this. It is practically free, and it's a wonderful resource. I really recommend it. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/michael99. That's my rap name, by the way, Michael99. Go to Skillshare.com/Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, 99, to get 3 months of Skillshare for only 99 cents. You can't afford not to do it. Act now for this special New Year's offer. It is going to go away at some point. You will know not the time or the hour. Start learning today. Skillshare.com/Michael99. Ladies, thank you so much for being here. Happy Women's March. Allie, President Trump tweeted on the morning of the Women's March, quote, Beautiful weather all over our great country. A perfect day for all women to march. Get out there now to celebrate the historic milestones and unprecedented economic success and wealth creation that has taken place over the last 12 months. Lowest female unemployment in 18 years. Is there anything for women to be upset about in America in 2018?
I think that's exactly what they were celebrating. I saw so many clever signs that celebrated the surging economy and the low women's unemployment, didn't you?
People were wearing
dollar bills, not vagina costumes. I think obviously that would have been a lot more apt. Not only do women not have anything to complain about in America in 2018, but we really do have so much to celebrate. I don't buy this whole intersectional farce that we are all split up based on our unique oppression and that we're not united by anything good. And that's why I think feminism is cancer, not just to women, but to the country in general, because women aren't allowed to celebrate the same things that benefit men. We don't see economic success, I guess, as something that is special to women, but we have to break down our oppression to something that's specific to our race, to our gender, to our socioeconomic backgrounds. And what they're refusing to see is the unity that President Trump has actually accomplished through his policies. And the interesting thing is, I was on HLN and I was speaking to a co-organizer last week, and I asked her, which policy specifically are you protesting? And she said, anti-choice, the gender wage gap, and criminal justice reform. Well, the problem with that is none of those things are policies. They're not policies. I don't even know any policies that President Trump has put forth that has been in opposition to those things. And this was a co-organizer of the Women's March. So they really do not know what they are marching for or against, not in a tangible sense. It's like what you said, just completely frivolous and nebulous, this intangible sense that they are dealing with injustice.
It's my central theory of the left, which is that they want the appearance of the thing, the form of the thing, but not the essence of it. So they want to look like those really cool marchers back in the 1960s. And didn't they look so cool? So we're going to do that too. What are you marching for? What do we want?
Right.
I don't know. When do you want it? Whenever. That's basically what it's become. Amber, have we reached peak feminism? Are women realizing that feminism is a pack of lies, as Allie was describing, that will just destroy their lives? Or, sadly, is Lena Dunham the voice of a generation?
Well, here's the problem, and I think you touched on this in your opening segment, which is the Women's March does actually have a platform on their website, but the way that they market the march is so reductionist that people don't even realize what they're actually marching for. Mm-hmm. So there's like these pink hats and there's nice signs about how women are so powerful and, you know, anti-Trump, and also, of course, some very vulgar signs, which stood in stark contrast to the March for Life the day prior. But women just go out there because they're told if they don't that they're anti-woman, that they're a bad woman. And that's why you have men out there who, of course, are trying to support their wives and their girlfriends who have told them that if they don't go that they're complicit with the patriarchy. So it's all boiled down to this this pro-women march, but no one can really define what exactly that means. So it's hard for me to say that feminism has reached a breaking point just yet when people don't realize what exactly they're marching for when they go out for an organization like this, which in reality is just like hard left progressive policies. But I will say, I was a little bit surprised when L'Oreal had this model come in. She was a hijab model. She was actually modeling for a hair campaign, which is one of the silliest things I ever heard, because obviously you can't see her hair. But we uncovered some anti-Israel tweets that she had made back in 2014, and
I'm
she
shocked.
Was pretty quickly removed from being a spokesperson for L'Oreal, which was incredibly surprising to me, because you have these leaders of the Women's March who are consistently very anti-Israel and pro-Palestine.
Mm. And something you said in particular, that is surprising. I guess that's a sign of hope. Something that in particular you said, it really sticks with me, is being complicit in the patriarchy. That is the slogan of our show, the Michael Knowles Show, Complicit in the Patriarchy. So that I got to write that down. That's a nice, good marketing material. Allie, what do you think? You're a Ute. You're a conservative millennial. You are very much involved in the culture. Is the culture turning against feminism, or is that just wishful thinking? Are we just stuck in our own conservative bubbles?
Yeah, I think it it's hard to say. I think we're going to see in the polls, which is actually something to their credit that they did emphasize a lot. Now, we'll see if their emphasis on actually going out to vote will work during the midterms and, of course, in 2020. But I think that's where we're going to see our answer, too, is all of this marching, this celebrity influence, this crazy bias in the media towards the Women's March and towards intersectional feminism and Linda Sarsour and all of this crazy stuff, is that actually going to translate into votes for the Democratic Party? And I'm just not sure, because you read off some of those stats that really the majority of Americans aren't represented by these far left policies that the Women's March is pushing for. So are people actually going to be swayed by the vagina costume? Are people going to be swayed by the crude posters of well, I won't even go into all of that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. On the one hand, I do think that the celebrity influence kind of gives them perhaps an upper hand. On the other hand, I think that millennials are we're not as impressed with celebrity anymore, and we're kind of turned off by it in a way. So I think that actually that could also do them a disservice. So I know that's not a clear answer. What I think that we're going to see is just how we vote and if we vote in the midterms. It's hard for me to say, because of course I'm denouncing it and I'm not a feminist and I didn't go march, but that's me.
Is that going to be the pitch for your new show on CRTV? Look, I'm not a feminist. I'm a millennial. How's the show going? The show prep
yes,
and everything? Tell us a little bit about it before we head over to DailyWire.com.
Well, I just came up with my slogan 15 seconds ago, so thank you so much. So that part's done. Yes, it will be launching on the 29th, which is next week. I'll be going to D.C. to meet all of my CRTV peeps on the 30th for the State of the Union. We'll be doing a live show all together on that night, but all of my videos and stuff will come out next week as well. So thanks for asking.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I had actually deleted CRTV from my browser. My computer wouldn't even go to it when it was just Crowder. And then now that you're there, roaming is going over there, I guess maybe I'll have to consider.
It makes it worthwhile.
I guess so. So we're going to talk about the March for Life, which is like the opposite of the Women's March. It has a point. It's very life-affirming. It's this wonderful thing. It actually coincides and aligns with the opinions of the vast majority of American women. But if you're just on Facebook and YouTube, I'm sorry, folks. You got to go to DailyWire.com to do it. If you're already a member, thank you. You help keep the lights on. You keep Covfefe in my cup. It's really nice. If you go to DailyWire.com right now, you will get me. You get the Andrew Klavan Show. You get the Ben Shapiro Show. You'll get the conversation, and you can ask questions. I think I'm up next, so you can log in and ask questions in the mailbag, and you can ask questions during the conversation. You get no ads on the website. All right, enough of that. What do you really get? You get this. I want like a little pink hat on top of the Leftist Years tumbler. This is the day to do it, folks. The anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and yet the whole country is turning pro-life. We've got the women shrieking. Luckily, I had my official Daily Wire earbuds in, so they didn't pop my eardrums over the weekend. And I had my Leftist Tears tumbler to collect all of their salty, salty, delicious, and incoherent tears. So go to DailyWire.com right now. You gotta get it. We'll be right back. The March for Life took place last Friday. Today is the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which invented some constitutional right to abortion that I don't ever really remember Alexander Hamilton or James Madison writing about, but they found it there somewhere. Allie, will we see an end to legal abortion in our lifetimes?
I don't know. I don't know about that. And on the one hand, a bad decision is a bad decision. And I think Roe v. Wade was a horrible decision. And I don't think it was constitutional. Like you said, I think he completely made up an inference from the 14th Amendment that had no founding in what the founders actually meant. And so you kind of hope that we'll go back to our constitutional roots and that a bad decision will one day be reversed. But it seems like we're going away from the Constitution wholesale anyway. So it's hard for me to believe that we will go back on this decision. But of course, I mean, that is my hope. That's even if it was just a 20-week ban, even if we just made headway in that direction, I would be happy. And I think that might be possible because I think Trump actually just made some sort of announcement to that end. But I don't have confidence that we will ban abortion altogether in our lifetime. No,
and the pro-abortion left, they always talk about rape, incest, life of the mother. all three of those cases of abortion constitute less than 1% of annual abortions. So that's fine. You right. want an exception for that. I could compromise on that if I could get rid of 99% of abortions tomorrow. And ironically, we were told Donald Trump is this lifelong, politically not quite clear, sort of a Democrat playboy from Queens. He's perhaps the most pro-life president we've ever had. He's the first U.S. president to address the March for Life, which itself is the longest continuous protest in American history. He's been very good on pro-life, and we can only hope that he'll push to just etch away at the edges. Maybe we can't overturn Roe v. Wade tomorrow, but we can push those bans a little further back. We can get more originalists on the court, and we can work toward that, as the March for Life has done for 4 decades. Amber, compare and contrast the March for Life to the Women's March. The former seemed to me was life-affirming, joyful, triumphant, really nice. The latter was miserable, shrieking, and laced with profanity. As just a matter of marketing, who on earth would want to go to the Women's March? What kind of people is it attracting and turning off?
Yeah, well, I mean, you pretty much just summed it up. The March for Life
Was that a loaded question? Happy... I don't know.
It was a really happy, like, fun time. Obviously, people had really nice signs. No one was screaming at each other. And then you go to the Women's March, and you have women who simultaneously claim that Trump is debasing the office of the president while holding up signs with curse words and vaginas drawn on them. So it's kind of unreal. And actually, the point was demonstrated pretty clearly to me last year. I went to both last year. I didn't make it this year. But I was riding on the Metro on the way to the Women's March to cover it. I was working at Campus Reform at the time. And I actually ended up getting berated by a random man on the Metro when he found out that I was a conservative pro-life woman. And to the credit of the women around him, they were very shocked at the way that he was, talking to a woman. It was very much what one might call mansplaining. I've never seen something like that at March for Life. I've never seen pro-life people offer anything but love and acceptance, and they're never judgmental about women who choose to get abortions. They're always talking about the message of love and how women are best served by accepting them and loving them despite whatever mistakes that they've made. And the Women's March is just all it's about. There are certain women that are wrong, that have internalized misogyny, that need to be re-educated. And you saw this with Cecile Richards calling out specifically white women who were at the march and how they need to do more work before they are truly feminist.
And just for the viewers who aren't familiar with Cecile Richards, she is the maniacal ghoul who kills 300,000 babies a year as the head of Planned Parenthood. So if you answer who...
It makes hundreds of thousands of dollars doing
makes
it,
hundreds of thousands of dollars. Right. Profits off of the sale of their parts and their organs and their limbs. That woman, that's Cecile Richards.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think in the Women's March, in their quest for intersectionality, they end up actually becoming much more divisive than they originally intended, because someone's plight is always worse than someone else's plight. So, yeah, you're a black woman, so you must have it harder than a white woman. But, oh, here's a transgender black woman who's missing her left hand, and all of a sudden you've lost the oppression.
The snake starts eating its own tail. And this is, too, an aspect. In the March for Life, these people are protesting the slaughter of innocent babies. They have a clear purpose, they have a clear objective, and it's pretty serious, but they're joyful about it, and it's because they have a seriousness of purpose and they're really doing something. The Women's March are griping about absolutely nothing. They cannot describe what they're protesting, but they're shrieking vulgarities because that's the only thing bouncing around their empty heads. And very often we see this in political debate. People who don't know what they're talking about or know what they're doing, they get crazed and hysterical, and the people who do have a purpose and a seriousness of purpose are a bit joyful because they're pointed toward the good. They're doing something that has a purpose, and they're going to achieve it and not let their own craziness get in the way of that. Speaking of totally purposeless things, the government reopened again. And no, we didn't give amnesty to the illegal aliens, and we didn't give up on the wall, but Democrats shut down the government last week, and then they reopened it today without gaining anything. Allie, what was the point of this government shutdown?
The point of the government shutdown was for Schumer to flex the muscles and for them to be able to use the rhetoric that Bernie Sanders has already made over the weekend that I knew was going to happen. They're going to continue it through the midterms. Is they are going to say, look, the government shut down. I told you that Republicans were completely unable to govern. They haven't been able to govern anything since Trump took office. They made you all these promises. They haven't been able to do it. And they shut down the government because they don't care about illegal immigrants, which we know is is totally not true at all. Trump can't vote in the Senate. We know that's a lie, but they are going to continue that line of rhetoric until the midterms to say that Republicans cannot govern. I think that was the entire purpose of it. I've always thought that Democrats wanted to shut down the government so they can use that messaging going into the midterms. I think that's what they'll do.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's so much more to talk about. There's just one last bit. We're going to have to skip ahead a little because we're running late today. The International Monetary Fund announced today that it expects global economic growth to exceed predictions, largely because of Republican tax reform. Amber, the better things seem to be going, the more hysterical the left seems to get. Why is that? Why are they reacting in exactly the opposite way that you would suspect?
Well, it's really sad. I think just in general, liberals and Democrats to some extent are so anti-Trump that they've put the failure of President Trump over the success of the country. They would rather see President Trump's presidency implode. They'd rather see the government shut down. They'd rather see Robert Mueller's investigation prove Russian collusion and impeach Trump than they would for, you know, everyday Americans to get a $1,000 tax cut. Mm. It's just pathetic. And they've gotten to this hysteria to this point that they're playing such heavy partisan politics that they can't be happy for any successes in this country as long as Trump is at the helm.
And even more than that, obviously they're dedicated to their political goals and their agenda, but they're so devoted to their narrative that when reality contradicts their narrative, as it has, they deny reality. They deny their lion eyes because the narrative is more important. So they predict that the economy will tank if Donald Trump is elected. They predict he'll become an authoritarian. They predict that this, that, and the other thing. He'll clamp down on rights for everybody. None of that has happened. The opposite has happened. They say he'll be a terribly obscure president. They won't let the press do anything. It's the most transparent administration in modern presidential history. And yet, they have to believe the narrative. You see this on the left, obviously, and even among anti-Trump Republicans. They're so committed to that narrative, but it's very important. The one thing we know about politics is you're never going to get it right. And especially the thing we know about Donald Trump is the guy is a complete wild card. And if you make a prediction about him, you're probably going to be proven wrong. So that the narrative aspect of all of it, the ideological aspect of all of it, is really not helpful to the ideologues. It puts blinders on them, and I think they're missing the reality that's right in front of us. But that's why they got to stay tuned and enjoy the covfefe. If you just enjoy the covfefe, you're going to see the world a lot more clearly. Ladies, thank you for being here. That's all the time we have.
Thank you.
Allie Stuckey, her new show is starting up soon. I'm sure we'll talk to her again before that all starts. And Amber Athey, great to have them both. That's our whole show today. I'm Michael Knowles. This is the Michael Knowles Show. Come back tomorrow. We'll do it all again.
The Michael Knowles Show is produced by Marshall Benson. Executive producer, Jeremy Boring. Senior producer, Jonathan Haig. Supervising producer, Mathis Glover. Our technical producer is Austin Stevens. Edited by Alex Zingaro. Audio is mixed by Mike Coromina. Hair and makeup is by Jesua Olvera. The Michael Knowles Show is a Daily Wire Forward Publishing production. Copyright Forward Publishing 2017.